Good morning, and may it please the Court. My name is Ty Galosh from Mayor Brown. I'm counsel to Mr. Rodriguez. With the Court's permission, I'd first like to address the state action question, which, although the district court's holding was not adverse to my client, was the question posed by this court on appeal. After that, I'd like to address the Eighth Amendment issues. Mr. Rodriguez's pro se complaint alleges that these defendants were state actors because it alleges facts that show that the state was obligated to provide him with medical care, that the state delegated that duty.
Suppose you have a prisoner and he's ill, and the government sends him to a hospital in the area, the prison authorities, and then there's some misconduct at the hospital. Why would the Eighth Amendment govern that? He'd have his malpractice remedies against the hospital, but if the prison has chosen a reputable hospital to send him to, why isn't the hospital an independent contractor and government has no responsibility?
Well, Your Honor, under West, which was a case in which the
give me an answer. Why does it make any sense?
Because the state's obligated to provide the care, and if that care isn't provided...
That doesn't get me anywhere at all. It's one thing to say if you're in a prison, you're stuck there, so the state has to provide medical care. But if they send you to, you know, a fancy hospital somewhere, and then someone at the hospital commits an act which could be considered punishment, why should the government be responsible for that?
Because the state should not be able to contract away constitutional rights.
I don't know what you mean by contract away. Their obligation is to treat the prisoners, you know, in a basically decent way. And if they send them to a reputable hospital and then some nut in the hospital stabs him or something like that, why should the government be responsible? What more should they have done but pick a reputable hospital or a reputable paramedic service and refer them to it?
Because as the other circuit to have this explicitly...
Give me a straight answer.
Because by depriving him of the ability to choose his medical care, the state has taken that obligation.
That's right. I mean, that's ridiculous. You're desperately ill, you collapse, you're spitting blood. You're not going to go to the yellow pages and look through and pick a hospital and pick a paramedic service or something like that. You're not going to do that. You're going to get to the nearest hospital as fast as you can. So the prison isn't doing... It's one thing if the prison sends him to some distant hospital, you know, because it's cheap or something like that. But if it's use a uncertified paramedic service. But if they're doing what any employer, say, would do if his employees started spitting blood, why should that be a matter of federal concern?
Your Honor, we do not know the facts of why they chose the first hospital or the second.
To prove that there was some, you know, malicious dimension. They didn't pick a reputable service. They picked some fly-by-night thing because they don't care about their prisoners' health.
But again, it's the relationship between the hospitals themselves and the state.
That's so abstract.
Let's think if, as Your Honor posed, what if this hospital had been chosen because they provided very cheap care?
Yes, exactly. Then you'd have a good case, but you don't have any evidence of that.
We don't know that because this complaint was dismissed before we ever got to discovery. Unfortunately, the district court deprived Mr. Rodriguez of the opportunity to find those things out. And at this early stage, he's alleged facts that they may have been that. They may have been a hospital that was selected because they provided the worst care at the cheapest price.
That's not in your brief.
But the idea is, as it stands...
It's a little late to be thinking up this all. You've pitched everything on the notion that once you're a prisoner, everything that happens to you, even if they send you to college or something like that, right? Suppose you have a very low-security prison and they say, well... You know, we want our we don't have to really keep these people penned up. We'll send them out, work at jobs. We'll send them to junior college. We'll try to rehabilitate them. You're saying that anything that happens while this person is a prisoner is state action.
I'm not, Your Honor.
Yes, you are.
Because if the...
What would you do in my hypothetical case? They say, okay, you're a low secure, you're a low risk prisoner. We're going to let you... We're going to leave the prison every morning and go to a nearby college and come back at night. And then someone throws an eraser at him in college and puts his eye out. And you say, well, this guy was a state... This was a federal employee, this person who threw the eraser.
I would argue that's not a deprivation of serious
mental argument.
My argument is that...
Well, how do you distinguish that case from this case?
In that case, there's no constitutional right to go out and receive the highest of educational care or even walk free and obtain that care.
Your position is that anyone who renders a service to a prisoner is an employee of the state.
If they render that service, one, if that service is obligated by that state, two, if that service has been delegated to that by the state, and three, if the person providing that service voluntarily assumes, they knowingly assume that obligation, I'd like to direct the court.
What sense does it make that a prison delegates paramedic services to paramedic companies? Prisons don't have staffs of paramedics, do they?
They
with
do.
Ambulances?
In fact, in this case, the prison had a prison medical facility.
Has its own ambulance?
I do not know. At this point, the prison has its own medical facilities, and at some point it determined...
It doesn't have its own ambulance. It doesn't have its own hospital.
I don't know what hospital services are provided at the prison. I do know that they have a health services unit. If that health services unit determined to send Mr. Rodriguez to someplace else, it should not necessarily matter to for...
What if it sends him for, you know, dialysis to the best hospital in the United States? And you're saying those employees of the hospital are employees of the United States?
If they know that they are treating a prisoner and they have that understanding that they're treating a prisoner, and they have time to reflect upon that, then I would argue in that limited circumstance of treating that prisoner, then yes.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay. With respect to, I'd like to direct the court's attention to Prophet v. Ridgway, which is a case cited by the district court when addressing this issue.
Let me just go back to Judge Posner's question. Why isn't the best solution here to have these folks file their cases in state court, negligence claims against whoever provided this service? I always try to go into federal court now and usually get screened out. And,
you're right, Your Honor. I think as a starting point, I think what's important here is to remember that Mr. Rodriguez believed that it was the state that deprived him of his constitutional rights. He believes that it is the state that did not provide for his adequate medical care. And in fact, when he brought a grievance in Wisconsin through the prison system, he referred to it as the state depriving him of his rights. So from his
perspective, you get into all these problems that Judge Posner is talking about when you go into federal court with a case like that.
And that's true. And number two, I think from his perspective, when he believes it's the state, he brings when he goes to the prison facility.
No, he doesn't know who is responsible. He just knows he's a prisoner, and he was mistreated outside the prison by somebody. So why did he sue that person in state court?
Because he believes it was the state that was responsible. They were the ones who took him to that prison. They were the ones who, instead of treating him at the prison, if the prison medical facility had been the greatest in the country and they had kept him there, we would be thinking that they were providing him a service, and were they to demonstrate deliberate indifference to his serious medical needs, then we would argue yes.
But he'd have a much easier case if he were just suing the paramedics.
I think that's correct.
He'd have to prove negligence.
He would have to prove negligence.
Why not? Why not?
At this point, his claim that he understands is the Eighth Amendment claim because they deprived him of his rights. The fact that it's that he may otherwise separately have a negligence claim. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Galash. Mr. Nagorka?
May it please the Court, Frank W. Nagorka, attorney in private practice appointed by the Court to represent the Plymouth Valley Ambulance.
Why is the defendant filing amicus curiae brief? That seems very odd. It's the defendant. Why? Is there some other defendant here and Plymouth isn't really the defendant or what?
I'm not sure, Your Honor. I don't.
Why did you label it an amicus curiae brief?
I'm not sure, Your Honor. I didn't do that.
You wanted to use a green cover. You don't like red. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, Your Honor, I'm no longer associated with that law firm. I can't tell you.
Okay.
Sorry. I think the court correctly, in talking to counsel for the inmate, these individuals that responded from the Plymouth Valley Ambulance Service, they're paramedic and or EMTs, and they had a transitory, very quick involvement with Mr. Rodriguez, transported over to the hospital. All they did was to put an IV in him, and then he was treated at that hospital. It was determined, according to the well-pled facts of the complaint, that he couldn't be treated at that hospital for administrative reasons and then transferred to another hospital. In all of the cases cited by Appellant, they're all physicians. These are paraprofessionals initially to start this case. And in order to find that these are state actors, there has to be something about them that gives the indication that they had an extended or meaningful relationship with this individual. They simply transported him over to the closest hospital where he would be treated for his underlying complaint. Paramedics don't treat the underlying complaint. They just transport and provide whatever temporizing care they need en route to the hospital. The second issue that we cite in our briefs is there has to be something, and Judge Clever, I think, appropriately found there was no deliberate. There was just no finding of deliberate indifference here, and I would agree with the court. This is a medical malpractice case. He had the opportunity to sue paramedics. He had opportunity to sue ER physicians, ER nurses, other treating physicians in the hospital. But in order to bring an Eighth Amendment claim, he has to be able to show that, A, these are state actors, and, B, that there was a deliberate indifference on the part of these individuals with respect to his claims. And all we have here under the well-pled facts of this case is an IV insertion and transport over to a local emergency room. The objective and subjective tests here, the plaintiff in this case would have had to been able to show, or at least the court would have been able to find, that there was something that was objectively seriously wrong with the plaintiff. And in this circumstance, the well-pled facts in the complaint don't allege the vomiting or the abdominal problems. They simply allege the IV. That's simply a therapeutic measure employed by the paramedics en route to the hospital. It is a medical malpractice case. And the courts have made it very clear that negligence or even gross negligence is not the standard. It's almost a criminal negligence or deliberate indifference standard. And I think Judge Clever appropriately found that, because if he hadn't so found, then literally any time a prisoner is transported out of a prison and there's some arguably bad result, or one can make the argument that there's a bad result, then the case would come before the circuit court or district court, and ultimately before the circuit court, probably on an appeal. So for the reasons that we articulated in the brief, we'd ask that the court uphold the decision of Judge Clever, and I'd be happy to respond.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Nagorka. Mr. Galash, I don't know if you have time, but would you like a minute to respond?
I'd just like to address the two points on the Eighth Amendment issue that counsel has raised. One is with respect to the seriousness of the medical need. There's nothing to say that the injuries that Mr. Rodriguez complains of, which is infection and serious pain, are lesser than other injuries and other medical conditions that this circuit has already accepted as serious medical needs, such as dislocated finger, broken finger, infected incision, hernia and those types.
What's the issue of what is the evidence for recklessness as opposed to mere negligence?
Well, it's actually something along the lines of a criminal recklessness here. And with respect to that deliberate indifference, let's just focus on Waffen for one moment, one of the defendants in this case. He was discharged from the hospital, notwithstanding the fact that he had complained repeatedly about his arm. His arm was red, swollen, immobile. He needed the assistance of an officer to get dressed. They discharged him, and then merely minutes later, back at the prison medical facility, they diagnosed him with an infection, they swabbed the area, and they later found that it was a MRSA infection.
And the hospital discharged him prematurely?
I'm saying yes.
Well, they're constantly pushing people out the door, right? That's the modern style of hospital care.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, and Mr. Glass, so you were appointed to represent Mr. Edridge. So we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client. Next.